as a council don't, that sounds terrible, we don't want to be associated with that, or do we just don't want to provide you a form with that, or do I just say, you know, if you show up, that's up to you? So what I'm looking for is just guidance on how formal of an invitation and or approval do we give the investigators from the AG's office to come and talk about the rapid DNA machine.
So is this one of those, like a presumptive test, like, I mean, you know, like a PBT or the Duke and Orange Levine, is it something like that that is not admissible in court, but it's just kind of an interim quick test they can do? Does it have to be confirmed?
It's a comparison test. So if you have a sample from the person, you can test to see whether an item matches or does not match. At the UAC conference last fall, they actually brought the machine in. And like James Swank had a Coke and somebody else.
They swapped a phone.
Had a phone. And it took about an hour to figure out who had touched what. And so it's an interesting device, but it cannot match to CODIS. So it's not like, oh, who is this person? That's not what it does. Is this a match with this person or not? A yes or no.
What they've used, at least in the presentation, what they told us they've used it for, is some comparison things like that to try and find out, are we pursuing the right guy in this rape case or here? You know, this thing, we have some evidence. We want to look at it. We want to figure out if we're on the right track. Yes, okay, let's get the warrant now and use that for warrant information, really, is what the way they presented that to us.
Yeah. And there's a big difference between the hour that it takes versus the months.
Years.
Yeah.
I was going to ask it, post you guys.
Yeah, I think it'd behoove this council to have Jay Henry come speak about it, because there are some concerns about them wasting evidence on this machine when it can be sent to the crime lab for a definitive hit.
It does consume the evidence, yeah.
And that's one of their main concerns, but also the validity of the machine itself.
Right.
And I think if we get behind this, that's making a big statement. I mean, the prosecution counsel is comprised of attorneys that push these cases through, sends a huge message to the law enforcement community. And I think, you know, we're getting a cart before the horse with this rapid DNA. So
we could frame it as a debate, essentially, where the proponents and opponents present.
I think what they're asking for is simply an opportunity to present to whoever wants to hang around afterwards.
They are, but the fact that it's a UPC-sponsored event that is getting the people there is, does the council want its name attached then to that follow-on presentation? I mean, no matter how often we say, guys, okay, UPC is now done, this is AG investigators, they're still in their seats because of a UPC event.
But their message is they are for it, endorsing the use of it.
Yeah,
they want the officers to use it. They say it's a tool
Correct.
That you can use in your investigation that's free of.
And obviously it's a decision that not just the investigators have to be involved in if they're going to use it. I think your prosecutors have to be involved in that decision, because if it is going to consume the evidence, the only evidence you have, that's an issue that you're going to have for your trial.
Right.
So,
and so in that line, the disadvantage of having the investigators go with us to do these regional updates is we very rarely will get prosecutors who are, you know, making that decision in the room. It's usually just the investigators. And granted, they want to pitch this to investigators, but you're right. If we want, you know, our attorneys to have the information to be part of that process, that information will not be delivered to the attorneys via these regional updates.
Well,
but I think they're still waiting for like a 702 hearing to pass it, whether it's admissible or not. It's
correct.
Is up in the air. So I agree. I think we're getting the cart before the horse at this point.
Yeah.
Especially if we don't have the crime lab on board with it. I don't know.
Right. Now Ed said that he's meeting with Jay, I think today, and you know, maybe that will change. I doubt it. You know, unless Jay does a big turnaround and embraces it.
Well, they're validating it right now. They're working to validate it, but that takes thousands, hundreds, I don't know, lots of tests and time.
Yeah.
And so that's why they're not endorsing it, because it's not validated. And so I don't anticipate that they'll change their mind from a conversation with Ed, because it still will come back to, you know, scientific validity, and they don't have it yet.
Yeah.
So I agree with Director Stevenson, we've got the cart before the horse.
So it sounds like we shouldn't even be here to endorse it.
And we're, well, we've also never really allowed people to come in and promote their services and their things in our conferences. Mm-hmm. No commercial entity we've allowed. I don't know why we make an exception for even the AG's office for something they're doing. It's a separate thing. It's
unless they're going to pop for Wi-Fi, then maybe.
Sponsored by the AG's office, who's also going to do a presentation afterwards.
Yeah, and that's a valid point. I mean, the reason that we've had the AG's come in the past is one to talk about, I can't even think of the acronym for their illegal immigration.
ICAC?
Yeah, ICAC have come and presented, given some information on human trafficking, you know, things that affect you guys directly. But you're right, forfeiture, you know, other things. But that's different than what this is.
In our presentation in St. George, they have an agreement of some sort with the company that's producing this.
Right, right.
So there is some commercialization here.
No, and I just and I agree with you completely. I just want to make sure that we understand that we've invited the AG in the past. It's because it's a service that the AG's office can provide you to assist you in your job.
Sure.
That is not a commercial, you know, contractual product of a third party, like you're saying.
Yeah, I think that it's also something, if they want to let people know, I think it should go from the top of the enforcement entity down, as opposed to hitting the rank and file.
Right. Okay. Very good.
Jeff? Yes.
So regardless of whether they come, don't we need to send out some information, though? Because if my investigators or your investigators are using it, and it's not going to be usable for the prosecutor, we need to
train
the prosecutors on what the parameters are, what they should be advising their agencies.
Right. Well, and I can send that again because it's been a couple months that I did send something out because the AG wanted me to send something out, the crime lab wanted me to send out NDA's position paper and their position paper, and the investigators in the AG's office found out and said, well, can we include this? So it was kind of a, you know, the pros and cons, like what you were saying, that I sent out. I said, UPC is not endorsing this either way. It's just for your information. Right. So we could do that again.
They're not saying so NDAA isn't saying this is a bad technology. Mm-hmm. They're just saying we're not comfortable that it's yet been validated. Right?
Correct.
And so we shouldn't be jumping to make people think, oh, this is, you shouldn't use this, because the AG's office is saying, hey, we think this is a good tool, and the company that created it, they're trying to develop mm-hmm. the precedent mm-hmm. that would, you know, maybe get NDAA comfortable with it.
Right.
And
right.
somebody has to be the first, right? And maybe UPC is saying, we don't want to be first.
Well,
we won't be first.
Because DNA technology was used in court the first time.
Of course,
right?
Sure.
And this is a new developing technology. Right. We shouldn't be scared of it.
It's being used by some law enforcement officers because the AG is reaching out. Mm-hmm. And so it behooves us as prosecutors to be familiar with it, whether it's validated or not.
Yeah.
It's going to become part of a police report, and we need to understand what it is.
Right, and we'd love to have, you know, a good case to validate one way or the other.
And I know James Swink is trying like crazy to get a good case. He uses it often, and Logan,
Well, that's what I was going to say. Robert's point is a good one, is we shouldn't say it's not admissible in court.
Right.
We don't know that if it's admissible in court yet, because we haven't had a case that's actually ran the 702 hearing on it yet.
Well, and it might be admissible in Logan and not in Nephi, too.
Yeah.
So we've got to have some appeals on it, too.
Yeah, and so we haven't had the case, and so I would be careful to say it's not admissible, because that's not true. Yeah. It's not like a PBT that isn't admissible.
But at this juncture, the head of our crime lab is saying, so, I mean.
We don't want to get in the middle of
the crime lab. Well, he's saying, because he's not doing it, and he doesn't know if it's admissible or not. Nobody knows that at this point. I think the technology is great. I love the idea of it. Mm-hmm. I only worry about consuming evidence.
Yeah.
You know, if I consume the evidence and can't use it again later for a full workup, then that's an issue for me at trial.
Mm-hmm.
But isn't that really up to each individual?
It is. It's completely up to the individual on what they can use or can't use.
That or not, depending on the case.
Yes.
But this came to us before the AG even asked our office to prosecute these cases. The agencies were using it. And so, like even on the front line before it gets to the prosecutor, some agencies are using it.
Right. I'd be a little worried, too. If you're consuming evidence with this technology, you might get a bad faith claim by the defense. I mean, if that's exculpatory, possibly evidence you're consuming in a non-admissible procedure or analysis, that would be a concern for me.
So,
if it was consumed in its entirety, absolutely.
But for me, in this situation, it's still a matter of what we're allowing to happen at our conference.
Right, that's what it comes back to.
It's we're not promoting it, we're not saying don't use it, we're just not saying anything.
Individually, we can make our own decisions for
sure.
Our jurisdictions, but yeah. I'm not sure UPC should. I think by having them together with our regional updates, it is an implied endorsement. It can be seen as that, at least, and I'm not sure we're ready to do that.
Yeah. So on this one, Barry, can I actually get a vote on this, whether or not to open?
Yeah. So, do we want them to present or not? That's the question.
I move that we inform the AG's office that they are not invited to present on the rapid DNA device this year.
Second. Okay. We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? And I think we just tell them we don't know enough about it. We're not offending anybody. We just don't know yet. So, motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right.
So going back to Will, is would the council, I guess I could take this to the training committee, but with council's input at a future conference, would it be worth the time to allow AG's office to come in and then give Jay equal time, like we're doing, talking to pros and cons so that we can at least, when I go back to the AG's office saying right now, we're saying no, but we will give this opportunity when both sides can be heard on the issue.
A fall conference breakout session?
Yeah.
Well, that sounds really good. Educated on it, whether we go with it or not.
Sure.
It would be really nice to have some case law.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
At least some decisions, one way or the other.
Let me just write this down. Okay, then just chronologically, the Crime Victims Conference is coming up in 2 weeks at Zermatt. Let me just say that Marlise got, she was a sacrificial lamb, so to speak, and has become the de facto chair of this conference. And as we all, those of us that know Marlise know, she's done an incredible job putting it together. Tracy Tabbitt with the CJC said that this conference would have fallen apart without Marlise's input. It's going to be a great, I didn't put the agenda in, but it's going to be an amazing conference. I just want to maybe highlight a couple of things.
It is. It's going to be a great conference, and that was in the works, and I don't know that it would have fallen apart if I hadn't. But everyone, of course, has their jobs that are on the conference committee, and I had a little more flexibility to be able to pick up the ball and run with it. I was a co-vice chair prior, so. But we have Las Vegas. We've got a sergeant from Las Vegas coming to talk about mass tragedy. He's our opening keynote speaker. We have Dave Colley from the Cold Podcast. He's coming to do a plenary.
That's the Susan Powell case, if you didn't
right.
know.
Right. And we also have the Desiree Turner panel, so the prosecutor advocate, James Terrell, and Jill Parker, their public information officer. They're coming as a panel, and then Desiree and her father, Matt, will be speaking to us. And that's, we're not quite sure what she will be up to that day, so we're just, excited to have her there, and hopefully she'll be able to participate in a way that is meaningful for her. So that's our closing plenary on Friday, and then we have a variety of other cold case investigation breakouts. I'm doing a trauma breakout. We've got some Indigenous missing and murdered women topic breakout. We've got a variety. It's going to be a good conference. We're excited. We have far exceeded our expectation. Last year, conference attendance was 190, and we're already up to 300. So we've had to change from the Matterhorn Ballroom to the Bernice event center to accommodate that, but those are good numbers. It's exciting to get everyone out.
Can people still sign up?
Yes, people can still sign up on Eventbrite. We did close it initially, but it has been reopened since we've changed facilities. We have more room, so it's not too late to register.
Good. And then the CJC, oh, I got this out of, oh, no, that's supposed to be May 15th, sorry. So correction to the top of page 4 there, the CJC BB conference is actually May 15th to the 17th, not April 15th to the 17th. Next on the training portion here is we are going to be holding our first ever DB boot camp June 16th to the 20th. It seems like at one point we talked about making this an invitation only as opening it up. And if we were to do that, it would just because we want to keep our numbers down because we want to make this a very interactive conference seminar. Sort of like what we do with BASIC, as opposed to having a large room of people that are just sitting in the room listening. We want to make this very hands-on. Marlise and Marilyn I. Tyson was out of town, have come up with a preliminary outline. You can see it there in my summary. As you look through and have any questions or thoughts or comments, we'll take this to the training committee as well. Please let us know. But as a result of having done Train the Trainer, we were sitting around saying, okay, how are we going to incorporate these principles that we've just done at Train the Trainer to make this an effective experience for those that are prosecuting domestic violence cases? It will be the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday morning of the week when the UPAA meeting will start Wednesday afternoon, go Thursday, Friday. So UPC staff will actually be in Logan the entire week for two conferences, but we're excited about that. We think we've got some really exciting, really cool, and timely topics. Let's see. And then UPA conference, Marilyn, did you want to say anything about that conference?
No, just that the agenda says going to be a really good conference we're planning for. And like Bob said, it's going to overlap the DB one. We still have two openings for city and county. The board voted to wait until the conference to make a decision. So if there's anyone from your office you would like to recommend, they're taking recommendations. And Haley is excused today. She is ill. So.
Oh, yeah, and we were joined by Ryan Peters a little while ago. So, okay. Resource prosecutors.
All right, Tyson.
My report's in there for you guys to see. You can see everything that I've been up to the last quarter. Just a couple things to highlight. January and February were the two highest months I've had in this position of technical assistance provided, which was odd. Usually those, over the winter months, people tend to slow down and not care so much about their cases or courts slow down and caseloads go down or whatever, but for whatever reason, those shot up pretty good. Moving into kind of our busy season in regards to training and conferences and travel and everything else, but if there's anything anybody needs in regards to impaired driving assistance, please let me know. I'm willing to do whatever is needed, and if there's any questions.
Thanks, Tyson.
Just tell Tyson we appreciate him coming out to Duchesne County. He did well.
Thank you.
Marlise, anything else?
My report is also in there. I've already talked about, which is partway through, about the Crime Victims Council. A good part of this first quarter of the year was spent in revising and making improvements to our 3-day adult sex crimes investigations course. We had a fantastic curriculum developed, but like anything, when you're developing a program, once we did it once, we had a lot of feedback. We had 32 officers in the first group and 24 in the second group. And so there were a lot of changes that were needed to be made, and that primarily fell to me, which that's fine. Again, I have the flexibility and the opportunity to fulfill that need. So we put that on in February and had great feedback again. We've got a few more revisions we're making. And of course, this is going to be a work in progress. As things change, it'll need to be updated and kept current and cutting edge. But it was really a good training. So that took a lot of hours. As a result of that, my HB 200 first responder training schedule, I cut way back on that intentionally. I'll be sending out probably next week a letter to all law enforcement again, just reminding them that it is available and that I'm happy to come out and I can accommodate shift changes and it's not a cost to them. So I anticipate some of those training dates will start filling up again as I move forward, which the timing of that is actually good because it's much better road time for traveling this time of year than through the dead of winter. And although I'm Canadian, I don't necessarily like traveling in the snow and on the ice. But so it's been a busy quarter in a different way than the past year, but we're shifting back into the traveling and the training and getting out and about, and happy to go to any rural agency, large or small, makes no difference. Both Tyson and I are happy to travel, so keep that in mind in your areas and remind people that we're a resource.
Thank you.
I put under Marlise, or included with Marlise's materials, a Center for Prosecutor Integrity. I don't know if you electeds received a letter from them. They sent out a mass mailing to elected officials, to chiefs of police, and it contained a letter, glossy pamphlet. The production value was, it was catchy, it was eye-catching. But when you look at it, the information contained, it was false. Actually, I'm getting ahead of myself. Marlise, maybe you want to, because you work with Ibawi and some other.
No, you're doing fine. Okay. This letter and letters similar to it have gone out throughout the country. So it's not just Utah. It's a mass mailing campaign. The Center for Prosecutor Integrity is not prosecutor-based. They are not prosecutor-friendly. They have an agenda. They do not like prosecutors. They do not like law enforcement.
They're attacking Start By Believing.
Yep. And as part of this, they are attacking Start By Believing and the trauma-informed response, which is scientifically an inaccurate attack, because we know trauma is neurobiologically based and there is a response to it, and that's been shown scientifically. So basically, don't be alarmed by it. We've included the materials in it. It looks very official, but it is just an activist group trying to get traction for defendants and suspect rights, basically. But be aware and spread the word also that your law enforcement agencies, they have gotten these letters. And so they may not understand the parameters and the source of it, and they may feel like, we need to change things. We're going in the direction we should be going. We're going in the direction that the National End Violence Against Women folks have said. They also have a response, and it's a pretty strong response that they have written, and it's found on their website. And I don't know, did we include that in here?
Yeah, or it actually classifies them as a hate group now.
Yeah, because they're that aggressive and far-reaching. So just be aware. I did a training yesterday, and there were investigators from different agencies, and I asked them, if anyone had received these letters, and several of them put their hands up, which was not a surprise, and others probably are just not in the know or the flow of the mail. But our law enforcement is getting it, and they may not be informed that it's not legitimate.
Right. It's like I said, when I got my letter, I had already heard about them, and so some of my counterparts, I want to say about 18 months ago, went to their national conference in D.C. because they're a relatively new group, and then reported back that it is an agenda and it's anti-prosecution, anti-law enforcement. So I was aware of that, but then as I read the letter, I thought, no, that can't be right. And so I looked up the sources they were citing, and they were misquoting and misrepresenting, and or they were just citing it and not referencing anything in the article. So please just be aware if you start seeing this in your jurisdictions. Okay.
All right. To IT.
Yeah. So let me just tell you a couple things, and then I'm going to turn it over to Ron. So in connection to the grant, we've had two audits, one from the state and one from the feds, just to come in to look at the product, to make sure that the grant money was being used appropriately. We've got nothing but positive feedback on both instances, in large part to Ron coming in and demonstrating what the product actually is capable of, and people are just floored. I mean, even my grant manager at CCJJ and the one that manages our grant in the AG's office, we're just like, wow, I had no clue. That is really amazing. Ed, Montgomery has been on that committee from the very beginning through, you know, the RFP through development. So we appreciate he and Ryan as well, you know, took over
Scott.
For Jared.
Scott.
And Scott. Oh, yeah, Scott. Jeez. My blinders are on today. So we appreciate, you know, all the work that you guys have done. It's going to be a great product. So we have done well improving ourselves to our auditors. And so, Ron, just want to talk about then where we're at.
Okay, so just, I don't know if it was last year this time or even earlier, we talked a bit, a little bit. I made an estimate of how much, you know, time I was going to spend on this project. And so I created a way to track the time I spend on any kind of support issues or training or anything. And I had estimated it was going to take, because it's such a new thing, and then I'm doing the support again for everybody, I was thinking it would take up to 90% of my time. Well, as I tracked it, it's actually been just under that. It's been around 70% of my time has been spent fully on support stuff. And I expect that to go up when we start deploying it to more counties, because right now we have two counties and two cities using the system. As we get more on, it'll go up. It'll spike for a while, and I'll use a lot of my time for that, and then it'll kind of gradually go down a little bit as things smooth out and we get things solved and going on. So time-wise, I think we're pretty close to where it needs to be, and it looks like I'll be able to handle it. I worried for a while, okay, what is this going to do? And I thought, well, I think I'm pretty sure I could handle it because we've done this with PIMS before, but this is a little more complicated product and has a little more, it has some law enforcement and defense attorney implications as far as they can use it, and then there's troubles getting them to do, you know, get their stuff, and they need to do that too. So anyway, it turns out I think it'll be fine, and I think we'll be going forward. It'll still take a major majority of my time for quite a while, but I think it won't be so we'll go forward with that. So now we've gone since January live in four locations, and each of them have been using it on for their daily work. And three of them are here. They could probably tell you a little more about what they think about it from their point of view. From my point of view, I think it's gone as smooth as it could with a new product that nobody's familiar with and that has not. And the fact that we made it, the complication is that we've got it configured to use for everybody in the state rather than just for one agency. But just one agency is a lot simpler to configure it and get it running exactly like you want it. There's some things that we can't do because I do this for one, we do it for one agency and suddenly, oh wait, three other agencies, that won't work for me. So we have to balance that, and that's part of the workload and and that's why we can't do everything we'd like to do. Plus the fact that it's a core, there's a core product that's used as across the whole United States, or they may even have it in other countries, I don't know, but they have it in a lot of jurisdictions in a lot of other states. And the core piece of it, they can't change for just, if we think, well, that's not quite right for us, we need it to do different, but that core piece can't be changed without it getting approved through a process, a program, and then make the program change and everybody that has the product gets the same change. But we can do a lot of configuration stuff on our end that's different from everybody else. So there's some, that's brought in a few issues occasionally that we said, oh, well, we can't change that, so let's just do our best to work around it. So that's a lot of the work has been making that work for us.
On that, I mean, guys that are using it, Ryan, Scott, Ed, comments?
It's going good. I mean, we're working out bugs that Ron has been amazing at responding. Ron, you put in a ticket that says, hey, this isn't working, and it's not an hour before it's fixed. I mean, Ron has been amazing at helping respond.
I don't know that I anticipated that there would be as much bug fixing as we're doing.
Yeah.
We're happy to do it. It's I think everybody's office that's using it has been taking a lot of time, so nobody should feel bad that they're not the first office getting it.
Right.
Thank you.
And we hope when the product is done that everybody says, oh, I wonder who made that decision.
Great.
It's a good decision and not a bad decision. Do you want to talk about the
yeah,
two factors?
Yeah, I would mention that a little bit, but I was just thinking that it's time that we've done long enough now that it's time to start getting it into other jurisdictions, because if we wait till we're perfectly, everything's perfect, it'll be another year or two before we do it. So I don't want to wait that long. I don't think we need to. So I plan to do that. One of the things that we're up against now is the issue with CGI data, the